Is God willing to listen to Christians who are so discouraged that they curse the day of their birth? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author, as we continue our series on the book of Job. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Jen Ogden, Associate Pastor of the Walla Walla University Church. And I want to come to that question, and we're going to focus on the issue of depression in this lesson, triggered by Job's statement. I'll read you a couple of three verses here, because his wife tells him to curse God and die, and he says, I won't. Friends come to encourage him, and they are silent for 7 days. They should have continued that on for a while.
Yeah, I heard somebody say once that they stared into his grief for 7 days and then spoke too quickly.
That's a good point. But then chapter 3. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. He said, may the day of my birth perish, and the night that said, a boy is born, is conceived. That day may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about it. May no light shine on it. May gloom and utter darkness claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May a blackness overwhelm it. That night may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor be entered in on any of the months. I could read on and on and on.
That's a very descriptive passage.
Oh, it is incredible. It
creates a lot of little mental pictures.
So the question is, and devout conservative Christians have a hard time discussing depression because we know Jesus. So cheer up. Now, what happens if you tell a depressed person to cheer up?
I don't think it's generally very effective.
Makes it worse.
Yeah. I think we're uncomfortable with the idea of depression in the face of a great and loving God.
Yeah.
And yet, in the face of great darkness, how do we react and interact?
Now, there's a statement in the New Testament, which could be taken, if it were taken too broadly, where Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Mm-hmm. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Now, does that help you deal with depression?
Not if I'm depressed, no.
Not if you're depressed. That's right. See?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me ask a larger question, and from your own pastoral experience, you can help deal with this. What can be the benefit of focusing on the discouragements of God's people? Those people who really tussled. And I've given a list here, and we can take a look at them. Which of these can be most helpful? And I'll just tick those off, and then we can come back and talk about them and see what that means for our understanding of depression and how Job might fit into that pattern. We have Job, of course, cursing the day of his birth. We've looked at that one. And then we have the story of Elijah in 1 Kings 19, where he'd had that enormous victory on Mount Carmel. And then Jezebel came and said, I'd like to take your head off. And he ran like mad, headed for Mount Sinai, and he wished that he might die. And the Lord comes and gives him something to eat. It's an amazing story. What happens when you go from the mountaintop down to the depths, that's Elijah. And then the most grim psalm, Psalm 88. Most of the psalms of lament break back into the sunshine. Psalm 88 does not. It goes down to the bottom and stays there. Jeremiah declaring that he wished his mother's womb would be forever great. Jesus, why have you forsaken me? And from within the Adventist community, Ellen White in her autobiography startles many Adventists, but she says many times the wish arose that I'd never been born.
And what's the context of that? Was that in her childhood?
That was in her childhood. That one is in the context of eternally burning hell.
Oh, okay. Mm.
But the other one, when later on, when she simply was overwhelmed with a sense of responsibilities from her calling, she says, I coveted death as a release from the responsibilities that were crowding upon me. See? So what can we do for those who are depressed? Does this book of Job help? Do some of these others, would they be helpful? Because I think that is a crucial issue among Christians.
So, I mean, I don't know. For me, depression is a very difficult subject because I've never been seriously depressed.
That's my problem too, Dave. I don't know what it's like to be depressed.
I have some acquaintances who have suffered from depression, and You know, I do know that sometimes depression is caused by biochemical imbalances.
Yes.
And so that really does not relate to necessarily to the circumstances of life. It's mm-hmm. There's something amiss in the system, the human body, and if that is fixed somehow by particularly by medicine, then depression disappears. So I'm wanting to make a separation between that and the kind of depression that overwhelms people like Elijah and Jeremiah, where it appears that it's actual circumstances mm-hmm. that have overwhelmed their coping mm-hmm. mechanisms to the point where they've decided it'd be better to die.
Mm-hmm. So, I am very happy for both of you that you've never been through any sort of serious depression. I've struggled with it in my life. And so it's when you're in that, it's dark and it seems very hopeless and it's...
And nothing anybody says really helps you.
No, and it's kind of a wrestling that you have to go through on your own. And I've got to be honest, a lot of people are not comfortable with the idea that you're struggling and they want to fix it.
Yeah.
And they're not okay with just letting it sit. You know, Job's three friends come and they sit 7 days and seven nights.
To fix it.
To fix it.
I like the way you said that.
Right. You know, that's what they want to do. They want to fix it. And there's this idea of...
Especially men. They want to fix everything.
Right. Well, and in the Jewish tradition, there's the idea of sitting Shiva.
Yeah.
Right? Sitting with people who are going through great grief and just being there, just being present, not saying anything to fix it. And many times we see people who are struggling with deep depression, whether it is that imbalance internally or situationally or circumstantially, that they're really struggling and we want to fix it. And sometimes it's best to just sit and be. And for me, it takes a lot of time and wrestling and internal dialogue and prayer to get back to a place where I'm in a right frame of mind.
And what does somebody sitting with you do? Does that help?
You know what? It kind of does. It helps me personally. I know there are some people who just hide
and would
prefer it not.
You know.
Yeah, there's something about the presence of another human soul saying, I see you struggling and I want to be with you. I cannot fix it, but I want to be there.
Yeah.
And that love and that affection being demonstrated in such a way, I think there's a beautiful...
Yeah.
A beauty to that.
See, the closest I come to that is working with people who have suffered a tragedy like the death of a child. And, you know, I have seen people dash in there to say, I have a few verses, I'm just going to slap them up the side of your head and then you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, and those people are offensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's offensive. The person suffering is offended by that. Contrast that with somebody who just comes and maybe brings food or something beautiful, flowers, and sits down and says, I am here just to be with you. And they find that enormously therapeutic.
Yeah. And in the tradition of sitting Shiva, the person who comes to visit does not speak until the person who is grieving begins to speak.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to that. I can bring beauty and wonder by just being present and being willing to listen.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's like God in the book of Job is doing that. He's listening while Job processes through everything that he's feeling and experiencing.
And when he gets through with that, he says, Job, you're a good man.
Yeah.
You've spoken the truth. Yeah.
He does. What an acknowledgement.
Yeah.
What an acknowledgement of Job's predicament and his emotions and his journey that God gives him.
But all in this list you put here has caused me a lot of thought. Job, Elijah, David, Jeremiah, Jesus, and you know, the one that I've probably spent the most time with is the one of Jesus, those wrenching question, why have you forsaken me? My God, why have you forsaken me? And you know, this is one of the questions in the Bible, these wrenching questions to which no answer is given.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, you could go to the garden too, if possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Let this cup pass from me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about that Psalm 22 one, you know, Psalm 88 is the one that goes down and stays down.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of the Psalm 22, which is a real live psalmist by a real person in the Old Testament, and just chart the trajectory there, it is really very sobering. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, I find no rest. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the one Israel praises. In you, our ancestors put their trust. They trusted, and you delivered them. To you, they cried out and were saved. In you, they trusted and were not put to shame. but I'm a worm, not a man. So, you know, he keeps thinking, those guys got help, and you didn't help me. What, you know, why have you forsaken me? See, and yet there was no answer on the cross.
You know, there's another piece to this, and I want to talk very carefully about it because it's not an experience of mine. I'm just thinking about it, is that depression does affect people in ways that the absence of depression does not. It's kind of like suffering. You know, if you have endured suffering and passed through it, there's a dimension to your life that's deeper or more profound than somebody who never did. Mm. I remember hearing a man who spent 12 years in jail in Cuba, even tortured with cattle prods because of preaching the gospel, and he somehow was released. And I'll never forget, I heard him speak, and he says, I would not want to go through that experience again, but I wouldn't trade it away for anything. Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, that struck me. Because he said he learned some things about himself, he learned some things about God, he learned some things about life that nothing else would have taught him. Now, I don't know, I sometimes think depression accomplishes that, but those lessons are expensive lessons.
Well, vicariously, and I could speak here of my own wife's experience, she had Lyme disease. In fact, it's been since 1979, 1980 that she's had that. So she ends up with very limited energies. I have way too much. She has way too little. And we're constantly having to read each other's energy levels off because we're out of sync. But in the process of dealing with that, she went through a battery of tests and she came to the bottom of the heap on clinical depression. Now, you take a devout Christian, that makes them even more depressed.
Yeah.
Well, through counseling and medication, mm-hmm. I can still vividly remember that point, where it was in January one year, she says, I think I can finally begin to see a God of love. And I don't think I ever could have seen that when I was depressed.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Because January is depression time, too.
Yeah, it is.
That's true. That's
and
true.
So, you know, vicariously, I mean, she would tell me I would come home, and she would dry her tears, and I wasn't bright enough to pick it up, you know. Everything's fine, see. So it has certainly heightened my sensitivities mm-hmm. to those kinds of things. Well, in conclusion, I'd like to read a few lines about the one item on that list I mentioned here, and that's Elijah. Ellen White's comment about Elijah. If under trying circumstances, men of spiritual power press beyond measure, become discouraged and desponding, if at times they see nothing desirable in life that they should choose it, this is nothing strange or new. Let all such remember that one of the mightiest of prophets fled for his life before the rage of an infuriated woman. Fugitive, weary, and travel-worn, bitter disappointment crushing his spirits, he asked that he might die. But it was when hope was gone and his life work seemed threatened with defeat that he learned one of the most precious lessons of his life. In the hour of his greatest weakness, he learned the need and the possibility of trusting God under circumstances the most forbidding.
Mm.
Thank you for listening, for all of you, and I want to thank our two participants here, Jen and Dave, and our program engineer, Jared Miller. And thank you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.